Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about flexible spending accounts. And to lead us in that discussion is Bart Turney, Director, Public Sector Solutions, Strategic Advisory Services of FSA Feds. That was hard to say.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Glad to be here. We're closing on open season, which begins next Monday, November 12th. So we hope everybody is taking some time right now to think about what they're going to do as far as their benefit selections go for 2013.
Great. And here to pepper us with questions is co-host Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NIT, featured person in Money Magazine, 2 weeks ago?
November issue.
The November issue. The whole month. If you didn't get it, get it. What page?
I don't know. 100 and something.
It was 100 and something. Yeah, somebody pulled it out in class. Anyway, so good to see you, Tammy.
Good to see you too, Bob.
All righty, and I'm Bob Lines. I'm a tax finance type with NITP. So, Bart, what's a flexible spending account? Let's start with the real basics.
Well, for those people out there that aren't tax professionals like yourself and who aren't in the program already, flexible spending accounts a tax favored program that allows the participant to put money into their account, and this allows them to save for medical and daycare expenses. The medical expenses, these are the things that aren't typically covered by your health plan, or in this case FEHB insurance or any other insurance that the participant may have. The daycare, it's your typical daycare expenses, those expenses that allow the participant and their spouse, if they're married, to work, look for work, or attend school full time. So those are the types of things that are covered.
I can't use it to buy a suit?
You could use it to buy a suit, but we're going to find out about it, and we're going to ask for that money back. No, we would not approve an expense for a suit, but that's a nice try.
Okay, well, you got to try. So we're going to talk more about how the wheels turn, but let's talk about what's new coming this open tax season. In other words, you're here to talk about it and also maybe changes or the new things. Let's do those first, and then we'll do the old second.
Absolutely. Well, the nice thing, there are very few changes to the program for 2013, but there's one very important change that does have a significant impact. As a result of the Affordable Care Act, health care reform for everybody out there, there is a major change on the horizon for all FSA programs in 2013. As a result of the Affordable Care Act, there will now be a maximum amount of $2,500 for all healthcare FSAs. And for the FSA Feds program, that affects our healthcare FSA and our limited expense healthcare FSA. However, that $2,500 cap does not affect the dependent care or daycare FSA.
What was the cap before the coming change?
Well, actually, IRS regulations allow the employer to set that cap, but with the FSA Feds program, it was $5,000 for the healthcare FSAs.
Okay, so they have
a significant reduction,
but nonetheless, it's a deal.
It is a deal, and if you look, and I think that what they did is they looked at what does the average participant put into an FSA, and I think that's under $2,500. So I think that's where they came up with that target. And it is still a deal.
And employees who have money left from their 2012 allotment, they can still continue to use that through, March 15th of next year?
That is correct. The OPM program has what's called a grace period and will continue to have this going forward as long as that use or lose provision is still part of FSA Feds or FSA regulations. You have from January 1 of beginning of a benefit period through March 15th of the following year to spend any funds.
That's longer than a year to find a way to use up those dollars that you set aside in the FSA program, which is worth. I'm surprised that not all employees use this, because I think everybody at some level has some kind of out-of-pocket expenses for healthcare, whether it's just going to the dentist or meeting your deductible.
Absolutely. I think if most people will take a moment and sit down and think about, they think that this is, and many times this is saving for something that may be unanticipated, or I don't go to the chiropractor, or I don't wear eyeglasses, but they don't look at the copays, the deductibles, the coinsurance that they have to meet on their health plans, and don't realize that those really common expenses, prescriptions, things like that, are eligible. Mm-hmm. And then if they sit down and take the time, they'll find out that at a minimum, they have a couple of $100 of these expenses every year out of pocket.
Yeah, I just think there's a big misunderstanding about how they work. I had a friend, and this is going to make her sound very stupid, but what she said was that she was going to have LASIK eye surgery. And so she was going to have it done in November. And I says, Carol, why don't you wait until next year to have it done? Put the money in your flexible spending account. She goes, well, I can't afford to do that.
Well, actually, she can afford to do that. And the great thing about the healthcare FSA is that because these are for healthcare expenses, the IRS requires us to make whatever your annual election is, we're required to make that available to you up front. So starting January 1, if you've put $2,500 into your healthcare FSA, that money's available to you for reimbursement. So she could have that LASIK procedure in January. She would pay for it as she normally would. Then she could file her claim for reimbursement. We could reimburse her in January, and then we'd start taking the allotments out every paycheck after that. So, you know, it could be a loan in effect.
Yeah,
as well.
In a way, it budgets the expense throughout the year rather than having to pay it all in one lump sum.
Absolutely.
And before we went on air, we were talking about the administrative cost one might incur if they participated in the plan, and that administrative cost is?
It's absolutely zero. Another deal for being a Fed in this case is that the employing agency actually pays the administrative cost for the participants. So, you know, that's another break that the Feds get here on top of the tax break they get in the program.
Okay, now we talk about tax breaks and taxes, as I understand the way this thing works, it's kind of like a quadruple tax benefit. No federal tax on what goes in, no state tax, no Medicare, and no Social Security.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah. And in most cases, that is correct. It depends on, in some cases, it could depend on what state you're in.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, and if you look at it, depending upon your tax situation, you can save anywhere from 20 to 40%. So let's say the average is 30%. You know, if you're putting $1,000 into your FSA every year and you're saving 30% based on your tax bracket, then that's $300 into your pocket. That's $300 you'd have to spend on something else that wouldn't be there if that money had been taxed.
Yeah.
Do you need to sign up every year? Like if we have it set up for this year for $2,500, can it just ride to next year or do I need to re-enroll?
No, you do need to re-enroll. It's not like your other benefits that you would have as a Fed, your health insurance that, you know, hey, I'm happy with my current carrier. I don't want to change a thing and it would roll over. With all FSAs, not just the FSA Feds program, you have to re-enroll every year.
And you do that by going to what website?
Actually, go to our website. It's www.fsafeds.com. We can re-enroll online. We also have benefits counselors available, the toll-free number to take enrollments as well.
Okay. What's that website again and phone number?
www.fsafeds.com. And the toll-free number is 1-877-FSA-FEDS.
And I'm sure you guys are going to be out in force at all the health fairs that are coming up this open season.
We will be at quite a few, but primarily in the Washington, D.C. area, just because we have some resources up here that we can utilize. Unfortunately, we don't get out to other local offices throughout different regions of the country, mainly because, you know, just from a business standpoint, you know, business model, we're different than the health carriers. You know, we're located in Louisville, Kentucky. We don't have, you know, a sales staff that's outside of that area. So we don't have any reps that are in Washington State or in Idaho to get out and help us at the fair. So we do a lot in the D.C. area, but we do support health fairs with marketing materials for agencies throughout the country at no charge to them.
Yeah, you have the same number of staff, whether it's open season or whether it's April.
And you're looking at them, yes, absolutely.
Okay, you mentioned something that I learned a number of years ago, and I found it surprising. An individual came up at a seminar and said, I'm retiring in January, but I need a lot of dental work. And I'm going to do it all in January and then retire. And I said, are you asking me, are they going to foot the bill for you because you're not going to put any money in after January? And the response was, yeah. And I said, I have a rough time answering that question, but the answer is yes. But in the reverse, for the few people that didn't do their homework, there could be a loss of some of the money in there if they didn't spend the money by what's that magic date?
Is it March 15th?
It's March 15th.
Of the year after.
The year after. So if you're enrolling for 2013, we're talking about March 15th, 2014. And then you have to have all claims submitted by April 30th, 2014.
Is that the same thing when you retire? You can incur the expense prior to your retirement date, but you could actually submit the claim up to, was it 60 days or 90 days after separation or 10 days?
Well, actually, you can, with the health care or limited expense health care FSA, you would have to incur the expense, you know, prior to your date of separation. But then you would have until the end of that submission period, if that's that April 30th, 2014, to actually file the claim. You don't have to file the claim right away, but it has to be incurred before your date of separation, yes.
Okay. Oh, so you still have the normal time frame to send in the expense.
I mean, most
report.
People are going to want their money before
exactly.
that, but yes, you do legally have the normal
time frame.
In case you
forgot.
Correct.
Oh, man, here's another form I forgot to send in.
Right, right.
Okay, so again, the mechanics of it. I put this money in out of my paycheck. I save X dollars in taxes. The money sits there, but it's up to me then to ask for reimbursement. In other words, the doctor doesn't go to FSA Feds and said, I treated Tammy, and we'll send her a check. Tammy has to say, here, I spent the money.
Actually, exactly. though, it's much easier than that, isn't it, Bart?
Well, yeah. It's not as simple as your doctor submitting it, but we can, in many cases, have your health plan submit it for you. We have a program that's called paperless reimbursement. And what that allows you to do, there are a number of health carriers that participate in it. And if you go to our website, fsafeds.com, we have something that's called a paperless reimbursement quick reference guide. It has the up-to-date list of health carriers that participate in there. So what would happen is that you would enroll in FSA Feds. You know, you would enroll in a healthcare FSA. One of the filing questions is going to be, do you want to participate? You know, if your carrier does participate, we're going to ask you, do you want to participate in paperless reimbursement? If you say yes and make that election, then your carrier is actually going to submit to us on a regular basis all of those claims that you have, those out-of-pockets, the copays, the deductibles, the prescriptions you've picked up, those are going to be submitted to us automatically, and the participant doesn't have to do anything.
Great.
Yeah, I've found in most years, because we participate in this as well, is that I'll save up those things that I would otherwise have to submit manually, but usually by August, I've spent the money for the year, and there's nothing left for me to submit. So I've never really had to file a claim manually. They've always gone through our health plan.
No, and I talk to a lot of people who say the same thing. They say, oh, gosh, you know, we're doing paperless reimbursement, and I turned around in June, my money was gone, or in July. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk to people at a conference in July, and they say, you know, my money's already gone this year. And we've even enhanced the reimbursement process a little bit more, and we are now accepting online claims as well. You go to our website, you click on online claim submission, you enter your claim information on the screen as you're prompted to, and then at the very end, you upload your documentation, that's your receipt or that explanation of benefit form you get from your health insurance. You upload that as a JPEG or TIFF and submit it to us. And so now we can actually accept these claims online.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. Is that available now or is that start in 2013?
That'll be available. Now we're also looking at enhancing that additionally. So this gives people basically three options to get their claims to us. You know, the normal way: download a claim form from the website, fill it out, fax or mail it to us. You can do paperless reimbursement for your healthcare limited expense healthcare claims, and now you can submit claims online. That's both healthcare and dependent care claims as well.
Great. Yeah. Now we're here this morning, and today is what is today? It is
November 5th.
2013.
Day before Election Day.
Okay, 2012. The day before Election
week
Day.
Week after Sandy hit. So
and
the
week
it's
after Sandy. But
in a week before, and a week before open season begins.
That's so. The most important thing, right? as far as we're going today.
They rebroadcast this show many times during the month, so the people listening, other than November 5th at 10:20 in the morning, we're off at about 10:58. Don't call, but you can certainly email us. Let's do the phone now, though, since we're live. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. I think we've covered the, I guess, waterfront, if we will. Now let's get in the water.
I've got a question about that. It's like, who is eligible? So if I'm the federal employee and I set up an FSA program, under my federal health plan, and I have self and family coverage. Who in my family can use the funds that I'm setting aside in the FSA program?
Well, it's you and your dependents. So it's basically a family account. It covers you and your dependents. So instead of just looking at something that you could do as the employee, you know, now you've got a benefit that'll cover the entire family.
So whenever everybody in the family goes for services, if we have the paperless reimbursement, then it will go through our health plan, then on to FSA, and the money should show back up in my checking account.
Absolutely. If you're the insurance holder as well as the FSA Feds participant, that's correct.
Right. And what are the ways of reimbursement? Because I know we always chose just to have it go directly back to our checking account, but are there other ways to be reimbursed?
That is the primary way. And that was a change a couple years ago. By OPM, we actually issued paper checks, but, you know, people move, people retire, and things happen. So at any given time, there was a lot of money floating around in the mail out there. And so from a security standpoint, and consulting with the client, we thought, you know, it's a good idea if we can try to go to electronic funds transfer primarily. So that's what we do now. During enrollment, we're going to ask you to provide a checking or savings account. What does that do? That makes the process a little more secure. It also speeds up the process in getting your money back to you. However, if you happen to not have a checking or savings account, or you bank with an institution that cannot accept an EFT, then we can still take your enrollment. You can still participate. You'll just need to do that over the phone and talk to a benefits counselor so we can have that set up correctly for you.
Great. Now, as I understand it, there are three types of FSAs. One is health care. One is a limited expense health care, and one's a dependent care. I'm making it really simple here. All right, so if you don't mind, could we go to number one, health care FSA? I think it's affectionately called HCFSA into the alphabet soup world, but let's call it health care FSA. What's that, and why? How is it different than the other two?
Well, the healthcare FSA, the alphabet soup HCFSA, that allows you to get reimbursed for expenses that aren't covered by your FEHB, FedVIP, or any other health insurance that you may have.
This is called your out-of-pocket expenses.
Yeah, your out-of-pocket expenses. Mm-hmm. This is for you and your family. The minimum amount you can put into an HCFSA is $250 a year. The maximum amount is now $2,500 a year. And once again, these are to pay for those out-of-pocket medical expenses. It's everything from copays, deductibles, prescriptions, dental, vision, chiropractic care. The list goes on and on. We have on our website, a section of the website, it's called the Eligible Expense Jukebox. It will list everything from A to Z on whether it's eligible, ineligible, or sometimes eligible.
Yeah, because you get people asking about cosmetic surgery all the time.
Right. Cosmetic surgery is not, unless it's resulting from a disease or illness to restore, normal function.
Or if you had an accident, disfiguring accident.
Then that would be eligible. On the dental side, a lot of people want to know if teeth whitening is eligible. Unfortunately for them, no, it is not. Veneers are not eligible. But crowns, root canals, your normal big ticket dental procedures are eligible for reimbursement.
Oh, so you can pigeonhole this, huh? But you could do a healthcare FSA, but if you chose to put the whole $2,500 into it, you couldn't do the other two?
No, you could do the dependent care, but you can't do the limited expense healthcare, and this is why. The limited expense healthcare FSA, it was set up to cover those individuals who are enrolled in a high deductible health insurance plan. Okay, it's a specific type of government insurance that's available to everyone. There are a number of plans that offer it to government employees. So it is a plan that has a very high deductible, whether it's individual or for your family. As part of that health insurance carrier provides a health savings account. IRS will not allow you to have a flexible spending account and a health savings account at the same time. So what OPM asked us to do was offer a limited expense healthcare FSA that would allow participants to set aside money tax-free to pay for dental and vision expenses only. So this is an account that pays for dental and vision expenses only, and you must be enrolled in a high-deductible health plan with the health savings account. So if you're a Fed out there who's listening, or you're listening to this and at some point in the future, if you're not in that high-deductible health plan, don't even worry about the Lex healthcare FSA.
If you're wondering what a high deductible healthcare plan is, that's something a lot of you probably should look into during the open season because it's a really unique product. It's something we actually tried out as our family this year. And I know when I signed up for the limited expense FSA account, it was very clear. You know, they made sure that I knew that this was only available for someone with a high deductible health plan. So I think it was helpful for someone who might have been trying to get into it and didn't know you had to be in that type of plan.
And we will also communicate after probably after early the first of the year, you know, for those people who did enroll in the Lex HCFSA, you know, we'll just make sure that, you know, you are, is it correct that you are
eligible,
enrolled in a high deductible health plan, just to make sure at that point.
I'll ask my audiences at the seminars, I'll say, how many of you are in a high deductible health plan? And I'll see like three or four hands go up. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. I didn't realize so many of you were in it. And then the one lady will be like, yes, I'm in a high option plan. I'm like, no, that's not the same as a high deductible plan. And someone else will be in something different. And I'm like, no. So it ends up that most of the employees I speak to don't even know what a high deductible health plan is. But they're available through right now through Aetna, GEHA, MHBP, which is the old mail handler benefit plan. And there's a brand new one this year through Blue Cross, Blue Choice in the D.C. metro area. Blue Choice is offering a high deductible plan. So they are something that... if you're into tax savings, it's another way to enhance your tax savings potential by combining that HSA with a Lex FSA.
I, like you, got one last year.
Did you?
Yes, Nancy and I. And
how about that?
After listening to it for 8 years, I figured maybe there's something.
Let's give it a try.
Yeah. Now, of course, we're not feds, but we have, you know, we're with the Blues.
Yeah, I think they're more popular in the private sector, actually, than they are in the federal plan, but we do have them in the federal program.
Yeah. Well, I think. I don't know if they're more popular in the private sector, but a lot of employers are being forced to move in that direction. I mean, that's sort of where healthcare is going. You know, if you look at this from an overall human capital management, you know, experience, that's where a lot of employers are being forced to move. You'll have a lot of employers that maybe had three or four options that now have a high deductible health plan and a standard option. That's what they're offering their employees. So that's probably why you're seeing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So we got HC FSA, healthcare FSA, and then the Lex Limited Expense Health, LEX, care FSA. We're okay with those two?
Yep.
And now to the third, dependent care FSA.
Right.
DC, not just for DC, DC FSA.
Right, the dependent care. And many other programs and employers call this a daycare FSA, but it is a dependent care FSA. And it's to pay for those eligible dependent care expenses that allow you and your spouse, once again, if you're married, to look for work, or attend school full time. It covers expenses for children under the age of 13 or any individual who's incapable of self-care. The caveat being you cannot have a dependent pay reimburse yourself for a your 16-year-old son who looks after his 10-year-old brother after school and reimburse yourself for it. It has to be an actual provider. And then the other caveat is that you have to have some earned income during that period, unless your spouse happens to be incapacitated or a full-time student.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a friend of mine whose daughter is she's incapable of self-support. She's 27 years old, but she needs constant care. So if she has a caregiver come into the home so she can go to work, can they pay the caregiver using the
dependent care account? Yeah, and that's what it's intended for.
Good.
Okay, so this is good. Now, here's the $64 question. Folks that listen to the show, folks that not necessarily are at the seminars are generally employed. But there are a number of people that listen to the show that are retired. Should a retiree consider an FSA?
Well, they would probably like to. Unfortunately, they cannot. This is not a benefit that you can carry over into retirement. Unfortunately, the IRS views a salary different than annuity. And as a retiree, they're considered annuitants at that point and cannot have a regular FSA.
Okay. What should employees be aware of who are, because we have a lot of employees, the end of the year is a time when we have tens of thousands of employees who retire from federal service. So as someone's approaching their retirement date and maybe they still have money left in their FSA for this year, or maybe they're thinking about setting one up for next year and retiring early in 2013, what are some of the things they should think about as they're approaching their retirement date?
Well, as they approach their retirement date, they need to look at the balance in their account first and foremost. How much money do I have in there? You know, where am I on the calendar right now? How much, you know, am I retiring at the end of December or am I going to retire in January? The one point I would make is that, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the grace period, about having that additional 2.5 months into the following year to spend those expenses. You have to be employed on December 31st. On December 31st, in order to take advantage of the grace period. So, if you retire on that day, you're not eligible for it. If you're employed on that day and retire on January 1st, you are eligible for the grace period.
So, tell me again, if I was to plan, because we have CSRS employees who might be retiring January 3rd of 2013,
then they would be eligible for it because they would be employed at their agency effective December 31st. If you retire before then or on the 31st, you would not be eligible for that grace period.
And what is the grace period? The ability to incur the expenses?
The expense, correct. Even if you had money left over and you retired, you'd have that grace period to incur those expenses.
So, if I still had $300 left and I retired January 3rd, I could go to the doctors on January 31st?
Only with the dependent care. I'm sorry. The health care, okay. Once again, that does terminate on your date of separation.
That's what I thought. Yeah, okay. I want
absolutely
to make that clear just
absolutely
so that somebody didn't
yes
get confused on that. So the
yep
dependent care, I could still
yes,
use the
could
funds that were left, but the health care, I have to incur the expense.
Yeah, that expense has to be incurred
prior
to your separation.
Got it. Okay.
I'm going to ask a question. I don't really expect a definitive answer. With the talk of, what do they call it, phased retirement? So you got somebody that's on the rolls as an employee, but that same person is also retired. I wonder if they would meet the test for this.
Have
I don't
you guys
expect
looked at
an
phased
answer
retirement yet?
No, I'm not sure. They have to be a fully reemployed annuitant. They can be an annuitant, but they have to fall in the OPM category as a fully reemployed annuitant in order to be eligible for FSA FADS.
So reemployed annuitants can do it.
Yes, they
can.
So
we have yet to find out about the phase because no one's doing phased retirement yet because OPM has yet to put out the final regulations.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what those would
will
be. Yeah, yeah. And we would find out whether or not we would cover that or not.
Yet to be seen.
Okay. And you have to be... I'm looking at your slide deck, which is very good. I learned a lot by reading it last night. Anyway, must be FEHB eligible, Federal Employee Health Benefit eligible. That doesn't mean that they subscribe to it, if you will.
That is correct. As long as the employee is eligible at their agency for FEHB coverage, they can have an FSA FEDS account.
What about the person? Because here's where I think some of the people are hesitant to do this. So I'm federal employee, I've got family coverage, but my spouse is a private sector employee and has me under his health plan through the private sector. So now my expenses are going to go to my FEHB plan first. Secondary coverage is my spouse's plan. Would I still be able to use paperless reimbursement or would I have to wait till I got the final statement and manually
you would have
submit
to wait. In this case, you could use a paperless reimbursement for the first portion because that could be tied to you and the family coverage. The secondary coverage, we're not going to be aware of, and there's no way to link that, if you will. Bottom line is, in this case, we would pay third after the first two insurances had paid.
So I really have to wait till I got my final statement.
Final statement from the secondary provider. Yes.
Yes, that's where I do hear some people say, you know, just I don't know if I want to get involved with the hassle of going through all of that to get a tax savings, but it's still a tax savings.
It's a tax savings, and it just, you know, if you have a family and you probably have significant medical expenses, even after that secondary coverage, you're going to have a significant out of pocket. I mean, I tell the same thing to individuals who are shopping a FedVip plan. You know, they want that supplemental dental or vision coverage. and then they'll read through it and realize that, you know, regardless, you know, they're paying this premium, they're still going to have to pay 50% out of pocket, for those eyeglasses, contact lenses, whatever it happens to be. Yes, you can use your FSA Feds fund to pay that 50%.
What about employees who have something like TRICARE, the military health care plan, and they're not using FEHB, they're just using TRICARE? Can they still use an FSA program to supplement what TRICARE doesn't
cover? Active duty military, and that's going to cover those people in TRICARE, mm-hmm. are not eligible for FSA feds.
But what about retired active duty who now work as civilian employees?
Yes, they could. So whatever's not, you know, TRICARE mm-hmm. covers most mm-hmm. everything. But as long as they're not active duty, they're still getting TRICARE coverage, they're now a civilian employee, mm-hmm. then yeah, they could use that for their out-of-pocket expenses.
But it wouldn't be paperless reimbursement through TRICARE, I don't know that.
Yeah. I don't know that. I'd need to see who their health insurance is with.
Right.
The provider, sorry.
Okay, this we mentioned the LEX portion of what we're talking about. All right, there's three of them, right?
Correct.
under the flexible spending account, we got three different ones, and we talked about it now Lex, you must be covered under a high deductible health care plan.
That is correct.
To participate with the Lex.
Right. And if you're not in a high deductible health plan, or you're not shopping for a high deductible health plan this open season, don't even worry about the Lex. Mm-hmm. All you have to worry about are dependent care or health care. That's what you need to be concentrated on. But we do have that product out there for those people who are becoming a little more sophisticated in managing their health care costs and want that high deductible health plan.
And the last one, the dependent care, you don't need to be FEHB, federal health benefits, eligible or enrolled in it.
That is correct. As long as you are not an intermittent employee, that means as long as you are going to work more than 6 months in a given benefit period, then you can participate in the dependent care FSA.
Good to know. Yeah. So even temporary employees could use that?
As long as they're temporary employees who are going to work more than
6 months in a year.
6 months, yeah.
So not seasonal employees necessarily,
right.
But temporary with limited appointments.
Correct.
Okay.
The other question I had was, before we move entirely away from the healthcare part, last year there was a change in the healthcare plan that said you can no longer just submit your expenses for over-the-counter medications, but you can still get reimbursed for some over-the-counter medications. What's the procedure that people have to go through now to get that reimbursement?
That's correct. That was a change. Normally, we reimbursed over-the-counter expenses. However, one of the first provisions of the Patient Protection Act that you know went into effect in 2012 was to require a prescription now for it. So that's the additional step that you need. We will reimburse you for that over-the-counter pain reliever, antacid, allergy medication, whatever it happens to be, but we do need a prescription for that. And so that's just the additional step you need to take if you want to be reimbursed.
So if you're at the doctor for an illness and they say, oh, you can just go pick up some of this or some of that from your local pharmacy, have them write you a prescription for it. Not that you need it to buy the medication, but you need it to get reimbursed.
That's correct. Okay. And, you know, for most people, you know, are they going to go to the trouble to do that for, you know, a mm-hmm. bottle of Advil they might buy? Probably not. But if you're on an allergy prescription that you take every day, or at least every day on a seasonal basis, then it is worthwhile to do that.
Certainly.
Okay, we're rolling. And once again, administrative fees, zero. So somebody puts in a dollar, they get a dollar's worth of benefit, correct?
That is correct.
All righty. Now, healthcare FSA eligible expenses. Healthcare expenses not paid by what wouldn't be paid?
Well, I mean, in most cases, your health insurance is going to pay a portion of this. This covers the things that are not paid in full. So let's say you go to your primary care physician for an office visit. You know, maybe it's your annual checkup. You're going to have a $30 copay, you know, stipulated by your health insurance plan. That would be eligible for reimbursement. You're going to pay the $30 at the doctor's office, but then we'll reimburse you for that $30 following the office visit. That's one of the primary examples. Prescriptions, once again, copays on prescriptions. Or maybe if you use a prescription, you know, formula that's above and beyond that what your plan normally will reimburse for, and you have to pay a higher out-of-pocket for that, we would reimburse for that as well.
Okay, and I'm looking at one of your slide decks, flu shots. Seems to be a timely topic. So
absolutely.
That would be covered?
That would be covered. So I'm getting mine this Thursday, and I know a lot of people have already received them. But yes, your flu shot is eligible for reimbursement.
And you got some other neat things in here, foot care, the arch supports.
Yep, these are all eligible. A lot of things that people don't think of. We have, you know, transportation expenses to and from the provider, parking expenses. These are also eligible for reimbursement, just to give you an idea. You know, substance abuse treatment programs, smoking cessation. That's another big one now. A lot of agencies are trying to promote wellness for their agency employees. Some of them are implementing wellness programs. One of the first things that they promote is, you know, end tobacco use. So, you know, smoking cessation would help in that case.
And mental health is just as reimbursable as physical health.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Noticing on the list of eligible expenses is psychiatric care, substance abuse treatment, that all falls under the category of eligible expenses.
That does, correct.
Good. How about us with compulsive disorders that buy a blood pressure machine and take it 16 times till we get the right reading? Does it cover health
blood
pressure machines?
It does. It covers home medical devices, and it would even, you know, and if you can't get that blood pressure reading exactly where you want it, it would even cover your prescription meds as well. So
to help you get it there.
Oh, good. Yeah. I want one.
Now, as far as getting reimbursed, I know from experience that it's a pretty quick process, but how does that process actually work? So it goes from you go to your visit to the doctor, and you then from there, what happens?
Okay, let's say we're going to do it through the traditional method. You would go to your doctor's office. You would get a receipt from the doctor at that time that says, the information we're going to look for is the date of service, the type of service, and the amount you paid. So let's say it's a copay. It's going to have the date of service. You went to the doctor. It's going to have to indicate on that receipt that this is a copay, $30, let's say. And so you got the three things we need. You could go back to your computer. You could download a claim form, fill that information out. You sign the claim form, make a copy of that receipt that has that information we need on it, fax or mail it to us, okay?
Okay, but if you have paperless reimbursement, you don't even have to do that.
You're not going to have to do that. Your paperless carrier is going to send that to us when we get their data feed from them at the end of the week. So you're not going to have to do anything except wait for your $30 reimbursement to hit your checking or savings account.
And that doesn't take too long usually.
No, it generally just takes about a couple of business days on a maximum.
I've had it within a week.
Yeah. It's, you know, we try to keep it right at that point.
Is that all? It must be done electronically on your end?
Yes, it is.
So
it
no
is.
One's sitting there filing claims or
no, and that's why forms. You know we prefer people to do it electronically. Yeah. It speeds up the process for them getting their reimbursement. And then the third option for getting your money back, we mentioned a little bit earlier, would be that online claim option that we're going to have now. So you could actually go into the system, you enter your claim information, you take a look at that receipt. You need to scan it as a JPEG or a TIFF file. You attach that to your claim submission and send it off to us. So those are really the three options that you have.
Pretty easy.
Okay. Now, we've talked about what you can do, not to be on the negative side, but we don't want to leave the impression that it's anything and everything. So there are some ineligible expenses, daycare expenses, cosmetic procedures, and I like this one, fitness programs, unless medically required. So I can't go out at 5 in the morning with the sergeant's boot camp unless the doctor told me I should.
Not in this case, it would be something that would require a letter of medical necessity. And if you go online, the website, www.fsafeds.com, and if you take a look at the eligible expense jukebox, you'll notice that we have three categories, eligible, not eligible, and those that are sometimes eligible.
That's fair, yeah.
And those expenses that are sometimes eligible, the IRS will allow if you have what's called a letter of medical necessity from your physician. You can download a sample letter of medical necessity from the website. And so let's say that your doctor wants you in that boot camp to help lower that blood pressure. So he is treating you. That's something that he's prescribing you to do. Take part in this boot camp on a daily basis or, you know, biweekly or whatever it happens to be in order to help along with maybe some other things he's doing at the same time to help lower your blood pressure. Then in that case, case, if that expense was filed with a letter of medical necessity from your doctor, then it would be an eligible expense.
That's
okay.
Good to know.
And I noticed one in here called hair transplants, but it also on the preceding page, expenses you could claim on your tax return. I do public speaking, but I should have a hair transplant, but I don't. Anyway, but let's say that I did. And I would say that's part of my job. Would then I'm not asking you for an answer, but it would seem to me the creative could do something here.
Well, there's two different points here, I think. The first would be the hair transplant, and the IRS considers that to be cosmetic in nature. Regardless of whether that's tied to your employment, it's not from the result of a disease or illness or to restore original function. The thing about claiming expenses on your income taxes, I think is something that's separate to, you know, altogether. A lot of people will come in and say, I'm not going to do an FSA because, you know, I itemize on my income taxes and I'm just going to claim my medical expenses on there. Well, currently that's 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. You cannot start claiming until after you hit 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So that's a lot of money for
you
most people.
You hope you never get that high. You,
it's something bad's happened, unfortunately.
And, you know, next year it's 10%?
And next year it's 10%. Wow. So if you're talking about a Fed who earns $50,000, okay, just as a simple example, they are not going to be able to claim a dollar. You know, they have to wait till they get to $5,001 before they can start claiming that first dollar. And that's a lot to most people. This is how you get a tax break for those expenses that fall below that threshold.
Yeah, I always look at it the other way with clients who say, I wish I had more medical expenses. And I said, no, you don't.
Yeah, you just
exactly.
you don't want that to get a tax break.
So here's how you save for those medical expenses that fall below that significant threshold.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I was noticing on the dependent care account, I think a lot of people may not be aware that you can use it for those before and after school care programs for school-age children.
No, and that's what's great about it. I mean, once again, this is to allow you and your spouse to work, look for work, school, attend school full-time. Part of that is that, you know, when your child gets into school, you still need somebody to look after them, you know, before school or after school, mm-hmm. you know, many cases after school. So, Right. Yes, it does cover those expenses.
That as well.
The only stipulation being is that when you submit the claim to us, let's say you have a child that's in a private school or school where you pay tuition of some sort, that after school or before school care has to be broken out separately on the invoice. Correct.
Right. And like you said, you can't use your older child to watch the younger child.
No, you can't.
But you also have adult daycare. So that could be a spouse or could it be
a parent
that you claim as a dependent? I mean, there are people that do that.
Absolutely. And it can be a parent, but as you mentioned, you must claim them as a dependent. Correct.
Right.
Does the parent have to live with you or just you? You must be providing for the parent.
No, but you must be providing that care for them, and they must be a tax dependent.
Got it.
The one, you know, if we're talking about what it does cover, comparing the health care versus the dependent care, I think we talked about transportation being covered under the health care FSA. It is not covered under dependent care, just to make that distinction, because a lot of people see that under health care and think, oh, wow, you know, I can declare my mileage for going to daycare every day. Unfortunately, it's not the same for the dependent care.
And I guess the other thing is, too, like when you send your child to summer camp or Boy Scout camp or those kind of things, are those eligible or ineligible?
Those are eligible. Sports camps, Y camps, things like that, that are serving as
substitutes
for daycare. Generally, the IRS will not allow overnight camps, okay, this stipulation. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, your traditional summer camps that you think of in lieu of daycare, those are eligible for reimbursement.
Okay.
How about after-school sports lessons?
After-school sports lessons, if it is in place of that after-school daycare.
Okay. These questions aren't aimed at trying to put Bart on.
No, but they're things that people will try to push.
They're going to ask us in class. I heard you last weekend. Do I do this? And anyway.
Exactly. What about someone who is now turning 65? They become eligible for Medicare. They're still a federal employee. Does that change anything with their ability to participate in the FSA program?
No, not as long as they're still a federal employee.
Because most of them will take Part A of Medicare and wait to get Part B until after they retire.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so, no, that doesn't change. That doesn't change their status as long as, once again, they stay
employed
and FEHB eligible. Correct.
Eligible. Yeah. Okay, that's good to know.
All right. Then for the people that are saying, gee, I didn't know that it did this, that, or another thing, they can go online and they can look at a calculator. And now the calculator looks at salary and the tax benefits and the like, but also I like that thing Jukebox. Now I come from an era of Jukebox, so record, but it's not the same. And so they can go and look. And
absolutely.
Press B12 to see if it's covered or not.
Exactly. You know, and is it covered? Is it not covered? Or, you know, could it be in my particular situation an expense that is covered? So, yeah, it's very handy. It's straightforward. If there's something that's not, you know, if you can't go on that list and find something, you know, that answers your question immediately, then we have our benefits counselors and our toll-free number, which is 877-FSA-FEDS. They're there Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So if you can't answer it on the website, then they can answer it for you in person.
Will the website be changing for the open season, or is it already currently updated for 2000?
It's currently updated with the correct information, yes.
So all the things in the Jukebox aren't changing. There's no big changes on what's eligible, what's not eligible.
Not at all. The only significant change is that $2,500 cap on the healthcare expenses, correct.
So someone who's ahead of the game and wants to start looking at things right now before the open season
absolutely
starts.
Absolutely. And that's what I, you know, whenever I'm talking to a group of people, that's a key point I always try to make and say, if you have questions, if you think that, you know, there may be something that's specific to your situation that's not apparent out of the brochure, call early. Go to the website early. Mm-hmm. Call early in particular because, you know, we're talking about, you know, people who are going to wait to the very end mm-hmm. to enroll. They're going to wait to the very end on December 10th, and they're going to call in and have a quick question. Well, it's going to be hard to get a hold of somebody then, just realistically. We can take online enrollments all day long, but it's actually getting through and talking to somebody right. that becomes difficult at that point.
What if you have a federal couple, husband and wife, both federal employees, and let's say they decide, I'm going to have self-only health insurance, my spouse is going to have self-only health insurance. Can we each contribute $2,500 to our FSA, or is it a family limit?
No, each eligible employee, and they don't both have, they don't have to have separate insurance either.
Oh, okay, you just have to be eligible.
They
for
just
coverage.
If they're both eligible for FEHA coverage at their agency, they can each have a you know healthcare or dependent care FSA.
So for the healthcare one, that would allow someone in that situation to actually use $5,000 next year.
That is correct.
Wow.
And so each spouse could have $2,500 for a maximum election of you know. $5,000 with the dependent care. Once again, that $5,000 is a household maximum. So
you couldn't have two $5,000.
Well, you couldn't have two $5,000. That's what I wanted to point yeah. out. You could have two $2,500s or you, mm-hmm. any combination thereof. You know, if they're receiving a subsidy, whatever the case may be, the maximum amount is $5,000
per family.
Yep.
But the healthcare one is individual.
Yes, it is.
That's pretty cool.
Tim, you bring up a good point, and I'm going to take the tax side of this
yeah.
just for a second.
Sure.
This is a non-political comment. We know the tax law is changing. I don't care who wins tomorrow. It's going to change. One might say, well, what if it goes up? This thing looks even better. My point being is this comes right off the top of your income. It's not income restricted. It doesn't make any difference what your income is. And it comes off your highest tax bracket.
And you don't have to file a separate tax form to get this benefit. It shows up right on your W-2 form.
Exactly. It's just like TSP. It's just like your health insurance contribution. It comes off the top. You know, the comment that I'll also get quite often from people thinking about a dependent care, once again, they'll say, you know, I think I'm going to just declare on my federal income taxes and get the dependent child tax credit, okay? But you have to think about their situation. You know, the more money you make, the smaller percentage of that credit you're going to get. So here's a way to get, you know, every single dollar that's available to you. And that's the only way to do it, to guarantee it, you know. And we have a dependent care worksheet on our website that allow a person to go in, enter their tax situation, number of dependents, all their personal data is on there. And they can see in black and white whether it's better to, you know, get a fraction or not a fraction. But a percentage of that dependent care credit, you know, or get the full amount on the FSA. It'll tell them which way they'll save more.
And I think it's important to say to people, sometimes they say, well, you're just kind of sneak. This is not sneaking around. This is available. This is money that you were going to spend anyway.
Right.
And now you get this huge benefit with regards to the taxes. And I don't want to sound like you should do things just for taxes, because you shouldn't. But if you're going to do something anyway and get a tax benefit, this is almost second to none, I would say.
It is. It is. And once again, that's what I try to emphasize to everybody, and you know, all of our benefits counselors do as well. This is not something to save for a rainy day, save for an unanticipated medical expenses. This is to help you save taxes on those expenses, those out-of-pocket expenses that we've talked about that you're going to have anyway. And it's the best way to do it.
Okay. Could I – we're running about 3 minutes now. I would have to – I would feel neglect if I didn't bring this up. Can you explain the use or lose rule? You know, this is a great thing, but you got to use it.
Absolutely.
And if you don't use it, it goes off the cliff. All righty. So how does it work?
Well, the use or lose rule, it's stipulated by IRS regulations. Section 125 of the IRS code says that, you know, whatever money you put into your FSA, you have to spend during that benefit period. You're getting a tax benefit for it. Okay, you're not paying tax on it. The IRS doesn't want you to carry this over because at that point you're going to have to be taxed on it, and then they're looking at it as deferred income. They won't allow deferred income, so it goes into IRS rules. So they say you have to use it during that particular benefit period. Okay, so we tell people, you know, be conservative. Take a close look at what you want to do with this money, how much money you want to put in there. You know, I'll just throw this out there just because it is common knowledge. The Treasury Department is thinking about potentially doing away with this rule. They had an invitation for comments period in August this year, closed in August this year, for people to submit comments on whether or not this use or lose rule impeded their decision on participating in an FSA, and not just the federal program. So we'll see if they make a change to that, whether it affects it. But, you know, right now it's use or lose. OPM does have that grace period, so you do have an additional 2.5 months following.
What happens to the money that's left in there at the end of the benefit period? Is that
I wish it went to me. Unfortunately, it doesn't. It goes to the agencies to help them offset the administrative costs.
Oh,
as we mentioned, there's no cost to the employees for this particular program. Anything that's forfeited, we actually send back to the agencies to help them pay their administrative fees.
Okay. So this, what we just talked about, should not be confused with a high deductible health care plan. That's right. Something different. That's not use or lose. This is flexible spending account. Mm-hmm. Now, just so that the listeners,
right.
You know,
because
when they
walk away from
this.
Because we hear health care savings account, flexible spending account, they're two different things.
And we'll be spending the next 2 months on that every Monday, right?
That's
and
right.
I think we do have one show called Alphabet Soup.
I'm sure.
We do.
There's a lot to know.
Yeah, with Walt Francis. Anyway, so final comments. We got 1 minute.
Well, I think that that we've talked about how great a tax benefit this is for federal employees. You know, they have a very robust health insurance, but they're still out-of-pocket expenses. This is how you save additional money on taxes when you're trying to, you know, look at, you know, tough economic times and stretch every dollar that you have.
Okay, Tammy?
Set aside couple hours during the open season to look at these things. You might save some money next year.
And listen to our show next week and for every Monday thereafter. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.